Thanks for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. And if you think you have to have a lot of space to plant maybe a prairie garden, our next guest may just change your mind. Graham Laird Gardner is with us today. He has over 25 years of experience in landscape design and project management in, public, private, nonprofit sectors, a leader in high-functioning, water-smart, and low-maintenance landscapes. He's also an author, and we're going to talk with him about his book. It's titled Tiny and Wild, Build a Small-Scale Meadow Anywhere. Have you had any luck with a mini meadow? How did you incorporate it into your landscape? What questions do you have about the plants? Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or email us to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Graham Laird Gardner, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you for the invitation, Larry.
So let's describe a mini meadow for us.
Mini is relative, of course.
Yeah.
But we wanted to talk about scales that work for people with smaller spaces. So it could be a balcony with containers. It could be part of your vegetable patch. It could be at the corner of your yard, somewhere next to your mailbox, or something that you plan to expand in time, and you want to start small to see how to layer and what works in your spaces and your microclimates. But we're talking small, 10 by 10. I didn't specify in the book, but what feels manageable for you to get started?
Yeah, that makes sense. A lot of benefits to something like that.
The benefits, reduced maintenance over time, and attracting wildlife, supporting pollinators, exploring the native local plants in your area, density and biodiversity of the planting, bloom time over the course of the year, incorporating more plants, and enjoyment.
I just think it looks great.
Yeah, exactly. Beauty.
And it doesn't require a lot of work either. Once you have it established, for sure. Dave in Appleton has a question for you, maybe about a little bigger space. Dave, what's on your mind?
Yes, thanks for taking my call. So I've got a smaller lawn, thought about changing it to prairie-type plants. I thought about skimming the grass off. You can buy these skimmers that take 2 to 4 inches off and maybe tipping that sod upside down and then planting the wild seeds in there. And I wanted low-to-the-ground seeds because it is a lawn. What do you think of that?
I think that's a splendid idea. I think that's definitely a good way to start and prepare the space. And you can determine what your height range is and then look for species that are appropriate in your area for what it is you want to incorporate there.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe even a soil test to look at what you've got there, or telling the soil test people what you are planning to do, and that can help as well. Yeah,
absolutely.
Why not? Why not, Dave? This, I think it's a good idea. It's not going to work for everybody. If you've got young kids that are all soccer players on a lawn, it's not going to work. But if somebody like Dave maybe doesn't have that issue and wants to have that beauty, why not do it?
To pause there, I'm not anti-lawn. I think lawn has its purpose, right? So
sure.
Depending on if you have dogs, if you have kids that play soccer, or you host events and, think of it more as a carpet versus a wall-to-wall rug reverse that. Think of it as like a rug as opposed to a wall-to-wall carpet. And And so scale the space that you want to keep mowed and activated based on the way that you use the space. And then you will have the corners and the edges to explore that small meadow possibility versus converting everything and feeling like this overwhelming intent versus and not being able to enjoy the space as you use it. I think we have a tendency to default to lawn because it's understood, it's easy to maintain, we can hire people, but the meadow maybe seems overwhelming, which is why I tried to break it down into a smaller space and really take the pieces apart so that people could explore it in those spots that they don't utilize often.
Yeah, talk, and maybe this would be a good point before we go back to the phones to talk about the book and how it is organized.
Yeah, I try to walk people through the way that I approach projects in an accessible way for beginners as well as maybe more traditional perennial gardening people that are curious and don't know much about matrix planting or interplanting, tight spacing. So it's organized from getting inspiration from the designed and natural world and the local spaces around you, the native plant societies, all the way through to plant lists at the back, maintenance, installation. We've got, I tried to hit upon all the topics that I could think of. I would say the one part that maybe didn't get enough attention was identifying and finding ways to manage invasive species if those happen to be a problem on your property.
Yeah.
And maybe in the next edition.
Okay. Kyle in Winneconne, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Kyle.
Hey, how's it going? I think I have one of these natural meadows. I'm not sure. It's like in the middle of my lawn. It was like a former garden area and have like peonies in the front and back, but I kind of didn't do anything for the rest of it. So now I got like the full flowers coming up. I got some like daisy leaves popping. Would that be classified as like a natural meadow, or what type of maintenance do I need to do for this area? I'm not sure. Thank you.
So popped up in the middle of his lawn, basically, from the sound of it, Graham.
Sure. Well, Kyle, I would say if it's visually appealing to you, then you're on the right track. If you'd like to augment it or provide a little maintenance to it, you could identify those species that maybe are more dominant and that you wouldn't want and start to cull them, and then also add in additional blooming species in the periods of time where you don't necessarily have something blooming. So I think it's always great to work with nature and with what is spontaneously occurs and volunteer plants. The one thing I would caution against is to think of a meadow as an abandoned area, because often we have a lot of weed species or undesirable species that occur, and it might be a little chaotic, and especially if there's an HOA involved or, you know, neighbors who are looking in. We want to also keep design in mind especially in a small space when we're creating these gardens.
Yeah. And you know, and Kyle, sounds like Kyle may be like a lot of us who don't know the weeds, sometimes being able to, what's the weed and what isn't a weed here, or what's something that's kind of invasive. I had some neighbors who had a patch like that, and I couldn't identify all the weeds. And they actually just hired someone, a naturalist, to come in and take a look at that space. That person pulled out were the weeds and left the others, and gave suggestions on what to put in where the weeds went out, and got a pretty nice looking space now.
That's a great idea. If you know of someone locally that is an expert who can help you begin to ID, obviously the learning curve there is, there's a bit of one. I try to tell clients and friends and family to identify those things that are undesirable, maybe 3 to 5 species. Begin to familiarize yourself with what those things are, what seems to be dominant, and concern yourself with those and allow the spontaneity to occur with what maybe you don't understand yet. Don't be overzealous with weeding. That's part of the charm of these spaces, is to allow that diversity and whimsy to enter. But yeah, certainly learn 3 of them. And if you know of someone who can come in as a consultant, or you want to go on a walk with a native plant society and ask questions, highly encourage that local connectivity with novices and experts and people who are also engaged and excited about this.
Yeah, absolutely. Donna in Stevens Point, we'll go to you now. Hi, Donna.
Hi. My question and comment is, I wish somebody had informed me when I started about rhizomes, because I was looking for my area, which is very shady and sandy, and so I was looking for plants that would, you know, would do well in my area, and I didn't realize that plants with rhizomes have been very happy and have taken off in my area, especially ostrich ferns and some other plants. And I've accidentally somehow have gout weed now, and that has just, even though I tried to pull it every year, it has just taken over and in my woodland area, and it's just, you know, almost unmanageable. So I just thought people should kind of be aware what they're planting.
Yeah. Donna, thanks for calling. Comments there, Graham?
Yes, certainly. Well, I happen to be, I'm guilty of loving ferns. So if ferns are taking off, I hesitate to encourage you to pull them out. However, if you want more diversity, consider donating them to friends and family. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if ostrich fern is native there. It was in New England. I love that fern. I think it's pretty stunning. The gout weed is absolutely an issue, and the local extension office probably has a fact sheet or a resource that could guide you in how to potentially manage it. I agree with stoloniferous plants in a small space, especially. I encourage clumping species and to really know the plants and create a well-researched plant list before going in, vet it with a few people, even if they're just friends who also like to garden, and always be cautious of giveaway plants, even though I'm saying share things with your friends. Most of the time when people give you a plant, it's because there's too much of it, and it might be that it's too rambunctious in their garden, and it will most likely be perhaps not problematic, but more aggressive than you might like, depending on the matrix that you're trying to set up.
Donna, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Graham Laird Gardner, our guest today, landscape gardener and author of Tiny and Wild, Build a Small-Scale Meadow Anywhere. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News. Taking a look at the book Tiny and Wild, Build a Small-Scale Meadow Anywhere with our guest, the author, Graham Laird Gardner. It's great to have him with us. Join in with your own questions or comments. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. Not all areas are great sites for a prairie, big or small. What do you need to grow a successful mini meadow?
Ideally, if you'd like highly flowering plants, you want full sun, most sun, you can absolutely create a meadow style, prairie style, in a shady place. However, it may not be as floriferous. And you want to understand your microclimate. So you want to be planting accordingly, selecting species that are appropriate for those areas, depending on the soil type, the pH, the drainage, the rainfall, and the light. So I think you can do it anywhere. I do include a shade shade list in the back of the book. I did write the book zone agnostic so that it would be more about process than about specific plants. And then I point people toward possible local resources where they can find more information in their area that's specific to their spaces.
Yeah. Jamie in Algoma has something for us. Hi, Jamie.
Hi. I would like to recommend the Picture This app. I downloaded it on my phone, and a few years ago I planted we just dug up this garden in the back and planted a whole bunch of wildflower seeds, and there had been a gardener previously. And when stuff started coming up, I thought, oh, no, I don't know what's weeds and what's flowers. And this app, it's not foolproof, but it does a darn good job of helping you to you take a picture and it identifies friend or foe, so you know what to pull and what to leave.
Jamie, thanks for calling. So Picture This app.
Yes.
Great.
Fantastic recommendation, Jamie. I use a couple myself, and there are several out there that are free. Also some that have subscriptions, and depending on where you are and the content of the AI, it can be pretty accurate and give you at least the Latin name to then further research on your own and maybe cross-reference with the area that you're working in or that your landscape is in so that you can see how that particular plant behaves in that area, if it happens to be on the noxious weed list or if it's a native, to cross-reference the Latin name. As challenging as that might seem, it's the most accurate way to figure out what it is you're working with. Common names can be a little ambiguous, and oftentimes there are multiple species that use the same common name, so I always recommend copy paste that Latin in and then your area so that you can see what the recommendations are if there's any hits for how that plant behaves in your area.
I don't have that app. I'm going to have to put that app on. Thanks, Jamie. And you have another one that you use as well, Graham?
I use LeafSnap. It tends to be great for woody species, sometimes herbaceous species. And currently I'm in Puerto Rico, and it hasn't been as developed here in the tropical climate. But back in the States, from Rhode Island to Colorado to California, it was significantly accurate and at least pointing to the top three possibilities of what I might be looking at.
Mm-hmm. Jolene in Chippewa Falls, we'll go to you. Hi, Jolene.
Hello. We live in a rural subdivision, I'll call it. The lot sizes are about an acre, and we don't mow the ditch in front of our house. You know, it's a ditch, so it's probably 10, 12 feet wide. Haven't mowed it. We now have little blue stem, big blue stem, porcupine grass, about three different species of milkweeds, and a variety of things. Well, I know prairie, you know, they burn them. You know, used to have buffalo grazing on them. What's a good way to help maintain it, so to speak? Do we mow it on a basis? What would you recommend?
Great question. I think given that it's a ditch and potentially, dealing with inundation and a bioswale of sorts, then I would say, I forget if you said it was the front of your house, and that, of course, matters. A late winter cutback to 4 to 6 inches will clean up the messiness of it, perhaps, and remove that, put it in your compost pile, and then also monitor for the balance of diversity. If you want it to be more showcased, then perhaps if there's one dominant species, you might begin to remove that species and insert other things to create more diversity. I would look for rain garden plant lists in the area, and they often show species based on what location they are within the swale. And so you can understand what would be appropriate depending on if it's at the bottom of the swale that's sitting in water or at the top of the swale. Very adaptable wetland species. Interestingly enough, they have to be able to tolerate inundation, flooding, as well as periods of drought. So aesthetic, you can evaluate it aesthetically if you wish to. However, it sounds like you have a great deal of diversity that's already happening, and you may wish to just do that one seasonal cut for tidiness, which I recommend as late as possible in the winter, especially if there are no spring bulbs that you're waiting for. There's a lot of overwintering insects and larvae and other things that benefit from that wild space that you've allowed to have occur in your front yard, and hopefully that's inspiring to your neighbors.
Yeah, and just cut it and leave it lay as well, just kind of protect those insects that are maybe overwintering in the materials, because No, go ahead.
The only reason that I recommend removing is because of building up too much organic matter. However, obviously in a native prairie, the everything's dying back and building that topsoil. So I guess that's part of the natural process. I've just found that in built gardens, in built landscapes, that we tend to want to over amend, and that organic matter over time breaking down can encourage more weed species and maybe more gangly, like tall flopping occurrences. And so the more you keep the soil, the less amended the soil, the better.
Yeah.
At least I found.
Yeah.
However, if you want to chip and shred it in place, it sounds like what would be happening anyway. And
yeah,
also keeping that wildlife and those insects on property.
Jolene, thanks a lot. Kevin in Monona, your turn. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
So I'm staying with some friends at a historical property in Monona, 1887, and it has an Indian mound on it, so I can't excavate anything. And we have polkweed, and it's spreading all over the place. And I've literally dug down to the roots in one corner by a telephone pole and poured Roundup on that roots, and it still won't die. I don't know how to kill this stuff.
Polkweed?
Yeah, polkweed, it's like a bamboo kind of thing.
That is
with
the worst.
Purple berries? Or is it the vine?
Spread underground.
Polkweed it is.
Yeah, that's where the common name can be confusing, because there's a polkweed that, at least in the Northeast, was native and misunderstood. And then there's a... Oh, I'm thinking of porcelain berry. So I'm not sure how it behaves out there. I would defer, because I don't like to make recommendations at all for chemical maintenance. I would defer to any fact sheets from the university, from the extension offices. Find out that Latin name, cross-check it with local resources for management as to best practices, and go from there.
Yeah, it is very, if it's what I'm thinking it is, it's very, very hard to get rid of. And you may want to get a hold of Lisa Johnson, the horticulture agent for Dane County. Easy to get a hold of her, Dane County UW Extension. And send her even a picture of it and ask for her advice, because if it's what I think it is, it's all very, very difficult, unfortunately, to get rid of. Kevin, give that a try. Thank you very much for calling. And Dave called to say that Seek is another app that he thinks is better than the other two that we mentioned. So the app Seek for weed identification, and Jill Nadeau likes it as well. And boy, the time's flown. Graham, thanks a lot for being with us. Hopefully we can get you back and talk again. His book is Tiny and Wild, Build a Small-Scale Meadow Anywhere. And nice to have him with us today. And nice to have you listening in for Garden Talk today. This and all our shows are a kind of a team effort. Our producers are Clara Neipert, Joel Patnaud, our technical directors, Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins, and our executive director is Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on Wisconsin Public Radio News. Thank you for listening.